Well, it certainly is Labor Day, isn't it? You know, I don't know why they call it Labor Day. They should call it No Labor Day, except for certain types of employees and businesses, like car dealerships. We're open and working. You know, we're kind of work when other people are off. But that's kind of traditional in retail. That's why a lot of people don't want to be in retail. They'd rather work in a factory or a, you know, some type of other business, a bank. Banks get to close a lot, don't they? You ever heard the slang banker's hours? Well, you know, sometimes it's overhyped. Really, bankers work a lot. Certain bank employees, depending on what you do, work fewer hours than others. Still, they probably work 40 hours a week. But Labor Day had a – I just was curious about Labor Day and when did all this start to happen? Basically, it was not good for the average American worker back in the late 1800s. That was the height of what they called the Industrial Revolution in the United States. And back at that time, the average American worker didn't work 8 hours a day. They worked 12 hours a day, and they didn't have weekends off. They actually worked 7 days a week because that was what was required to be able to eat. You know, there were restrictions in some states as far as what age children could work. But, I mean, that was a big problem. There were children 5, 6 years old that were working in mills, factories. They worked in mines across the country. They were cheap labor, you know, because you didn't have to pay them as much as you paid adults. And so those greedy capitalists, I guess, took advantage of them. I'm a capitalist, too, so but not greedy. But people of all ages, particularly the poor and a lot of the immigrants at that time, faced really unsafe working conditions. And what was happening is people were moving into the industrial age and out of the agriculture age. And that's when labor unions first appeared in that time frame. They began organizing strikes and rallies and stuff like that to protest poor conditions. You know, it's amazing how so many different good things arise out of bad things. Many of these events turned violent during the period. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but back in 1886, there was this Haymarket riot in which several Chicago policemen and workers were killed. You know, this led to a lot of new laws and basically designed to keep workers from getting so upset that they felt like they needed to riot and get violent. But the idea of a working man's and woman's holiday was being celebrated on the first Monday in September. It caught on in other industrial centers around the country, and many states passed legislation which recognized it. Congress, you know what that is, right? That's all those crazy people up in Washington. They would not legalize a holiday until 12 years later. On June 28, 1894, President, can you guess who the president was? Grover Cleveland. Yep, he signed it into law. And, you know, the true founder of Labor Day has yet to be identified. Major credit goes to a guy named Peter McGuire, co-founder of the American Federation of Labor, while others suggested that a guy named Matthew McGuire, the Secretary of Central Labor Union, first proposed the holiday. But who cares? You know, it's Monday and we're not working, or you're not working. And so that's a good thing, I guess. Hey, fact or fiction, can you pump your gas with your car running? Or should you pump gas with your car running is a better way to phrase that. Well, you know, if it's really hot or it's really cold outside, sometimes you just don't feel like standing outside while your car is filling up or your truck is filling up when it has a, you know, 36-gallon fuel tank. I get it. I understand. It's uncomfortable. But with your car running, there are some risks involved that you need to think about. One is the risk of static electricity and a spark. So, you know, when you're putting gas in a car, you know, they've got those little plastic gaskets that are supposed to help contain gas fumes and stuff. But fumes leak out, and they are very volatile, much more so than just the liquid gas itself. The fumes are what what can get you hurt. And then also, if your car is really sensitive, then the check engine light can be triggered because you left the gas door open while the car was running. And you're not supposed to do that either. So my recommendation is to turn the car off and suffer in the heat or the cold and not let your car run, because the reward is great. The risk is, not tremendous, but still it's there. I told you guys about when I was at Weigel's one time. I went to fill up some gas cans, and I was leaning over, and one of the hoses burst and was spraying gasoline in my face. And I mean, it got worse and worse. It was like a rooster tail of gas spraying all the way up to the ceiling of the canopy there. And this lady came running out of Weigel's and said, "You can't do that, sir. You can't do that." And I said, "The hose busted." I was soaking with gas and just praying that there was nobody around me that just lit up some Marlboros. You know, so you just got to, it was not good. It burned my corneas. You know, I ended up going after them legally, threatening to, and they paid me a little bit of money. I was upset. I mean, this was I could have been killed, literally. And I had to go to the emergency room and had a bill, and they acted like they didn't even care. You know, if you just act like you care sometimes and apologize, people will forgive you. But when you act like you don't care and it was something serious, then, that can lead to some unpleasantness. I ended up with the money that they paid me, I ended up buying one of those egg grills. So that was my revenge. Every time I cook steaks or chicken on my egg, I say, that's what you get, Weigel's, for spraying gas. I didn't get much money. I think my hospital bill was $1,400 and my grill ended up costing about $1,200. So I maybe had some pocket change left over to go get some pals tea, but that's pretty much all I got from my terrifying experience. How would you like that? Can you imagine? I can see somebody, maybe the gas filler falling out of a can or something like that and spilling gas around and stuff like that. And that's bad enough. Or when a gas, when you leave it hooked and up connected to your car and it keeps spilling over and the nozzle won't cut off. I mean, I've had that happen to me too. But imagine a rooster tail of high pressure gasoline spraying in your face. That's no fun. So I guess the moral of that story is maybe not bend over to the gas can with the gas hose close to your face. I don't know how you do it otherwise. You're not supposed to fill gas cans when they're in your vehicle, like in the back of a pickup truck or something, because of that same static electricity chance, plastic on plastic. I've rubbed enough balloons on my belly to create some static electricity and get them to stick to me to know that it's not hard to get two things to rub together and create a spark. So you got to watch out for that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, we'll take our first break and be back here in just a minute. All right, so it is Labor Day, and it's a big day in the car business for shopping and buying cars. You may be in the market. You may be heading out right now. You may be in the car. You may be turning into the dealership right now. And when you drive in, what you're going to see today is you're going to see, especially if it's a new car dealership, that's what I'm talking about, you're going to see a gallant or valiant attempt by the dealership to make it look like they have a bunch of cars in stock. Most of those cars that you're going to see are used, pre-owned vehicles that have been traded in. Now, the business has been good. We've been selling a lot of cars. Up till last month was down in some areas. Our sales with Nissan were up 165% over last year. But what's going on last year. So not a whole lot of big numbers, but they've been pretty decent. So there's a lot of trades, but dealers have been pretty much shut off from the auctions because guess who's buying all the cars at the auctions? Rental car companies. Because the manufacturers aren't making vehicles now. People are traveling again. Well, maybe up to this recent Delta thing going on. But people have really started traveling. People are wanting to rent cars. Have you seen what it costs to rent a car lately? You might as well buy it. I mean, it is very, very high. In Las Vegas, I was just checking on some of the rates, $350 a day to rent a car. So When you're able to charge that kind of money to rent a car, there's a great incentive for you to go to the auction and buy anything that crosses the block. And so when I used to go to the auction, you know, you're competing against other dealers typically to buy the car, to have your hand raised, and you win the bid. Now it's pretty much done online. I don't even go to the sale very often anymore. Usually I just get on my computer and buy cars on the computer. We buy insurance that guarantees that the car is going to be right. So if it gets here and I don't like it, I just send it back. But right now, where I used to be competing against other dealers, now I'm competing against Hertz, Avis, National Car Rental, if not Carvana, CarMax, and those. And folks, the people think they get good, great deals at Carvana. No. They pay more for cars than any dealer would, and so you're paying more for the cars when you buy it from them. Now, it's easy. Yeah, you can have a nice little truck show up at your door and drive away and unload the car, and they're real nice, and you don't have to go into a car dealership. But you're going to pay more for that car, but maybe you don't care. Maybe you're just out for a great experience. And, you know, I'm seeing a lot of great experiences in here, you know, in our dealership and other places. But what you're going to see is a pretty thin supply of new vehicles. I don't care where you go. If you go to a Honda dealership, Subaru, Nissan, Ford, Chevy. Slim pickings, folks, out there. My recommendation, if you want to buy a car in the next 6 months, order it. Just sit down with the dealership and order it. You know, if you want a Ford, come down here to Gateway. Talk to Ben, my nephew, or my son-in-law. So I always say that. I always get him confused. He's married to my daughter. That's not a nephew. But anyway, or you can talk to my nephew, Max. He works here as well. Or me. And we'll sit down and spec something. Now, you get exactly what you want. Now, it may take a while, and you'll have to continue in your trade-in, but that's a one sure way to get in line and be able to get what you want. Otherwise, you're going to have to settle because there's not a lot of new vehicle inventory. Now, used vehicle inventory, it's out there, but you're going to pay out the nose for it right now. Now, the positive side of that, here's the positive if you're buying a car right now. Interest rates are very low. Selection is decent on used cars, and the value of your trade-in is going to be very high, but you got to make sure you get it. You know, the value of your trade-in is wonderful if you get it, but if you don't get the value and you've succumbed to the pressures of a fast-talking salesperson, and all of a sudden, instead of talking about the purchase price that you're paying for the car, they use their ingenuity and cunningness, is that a word, to get you to focus on the monthly payment. Anybody that's ever listened to this radio show more than a week will probably remember me talking about you never buy a car based on the monthly payment. I realize that the monthly payment is important because that has to fit into your budget. But too many dealers manipulate the monthly payment by adjusting the term. And so, you know, you go in, you've never financed a car more than 60 months, and then before you know it, they're presenting you numbers, and those numbers are based on 84-month financing. And you're not really paying attention. You're just looking at that monthly payment of $349 a month, and you say, well, I could do that. And then you get into the finance office and you sign all the paperwork and they're real nice and stuff. And then you do a really good delivery and you take it home and you pull out your contract and say, 84 months? What? And so you weren't paying attention. So let's find out what we're paying for the car. Let's see what's the sale price on the new vehicle that you're buying. How much are they paying you for your trade-in? How much are you getting from the manufacturer and rebates, which I can tell you right now, that's going to be about Zippo. So you're not going to get any of that. You know, what kind of interest rate are you paying? And based on that interest rate and the trade difference and your payoff, if you have a payoff on a car, what are your payments going to be based on 60 months, maybe 72 months? And if you want to see an 84-month payment, fine. But just think about that now. You buy a car when prices are really high and you finance it for 84 months. Then all of a sudden, sometime in the next 2 to 3 years, things normalize. There is no chip shortage anymore. And used car values plummet. All right? So you're in an 84-month contract, and all of a sudden you went from an equity position to where you are upside down to the tune of $10,000 or more. Because, and it, you know, you're just making your monthly payments like you're supposed to, but the value of your collateral has dropped. Your car is the collateral for the bank. And so it has dropped in value. And then so you finance a car for 84 months and you like to trade every 36 months. You know, let's say that on average you trade every 4 years. And you finance a car for 60 months, you're probably going to be in an equity position in that loan. But if you finance it for 72, it's questionable. 84, you're buried. You're buried in that car. And that's a term that we use in the car business. In other words, you owe a lot more on that car than it's worth. And then, yeah, you know, can you trade out? Sure you can. You're just going to carry over that negative equity onto the next loan. That does not just go poof when you trade your trade-in car in. If you're upside down, that money is carried over to your next loan. That's not just a Gateway Ford. That's everywhere. You know, I actually had a dealer call me the other day. We were talking about this other dealer. You know, sometimes we do that. And some of the practices that they do. And they actually had a customer come to them. This guy that I'm talking to had a customer come to him and say, you know what they told me over at that other dealership? And he said, what? They said, since I was so upside down, just let my car go back. Let them repo it and go ahead and buy a new one right now. You know, that should be illegal. Not sure whether that advice is illegal. It's certainly unethical because the customer is naive and doesn't understand that when they let that car go back, it's going to, you know, destroy their credit, number one. Number two, when that vehicle is sold at auction or wherever it's sold, they will be responsible for the deficiency balance on that trade-in. So whatever the trade sold minus what they owed on it, that let's say that ends up being $8,000, the bank is going to sue them for $8,000. And what happens when they sue you for $8,000? Well, it goes to court, and they get a judgment, and then they can garnish your wages, which means that when you used to make $500 a week at your job, now all of a sudden you're making $350 a week because the bank is getting the rest of your paycheck. That's how it works. And then if you don't want to pay it, what happens then is you end up filing for bankruptcy. Now, sometimes, you know, some of these banks will charge off loans, but that's going to appear on your credit. So instead of having a 750 Beacon score, you've got a 400 Beacon score, and you go in and try to buy your next car. And you know what penalty that you pay? Higher interest rate. So instead of being able to get 0 or 1.9 or 2.9, you're paying 21% interest on a car loan. And so does that restrict your ability to get what you want? You better believe it. And a lot of banks won't even finance you. Number one, if you have bad payment history, if you had a recent repo or a bankruptcy or something like that, they won't finance you. But also, they're going to penalize you with a high interest rate. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to go there. You know, one of the things that I've always wanted to do is go to high schools and to talk to juniors before they become seniors and talk to new graduates and say, listen, you know, your credit, let me tell you how to establish it, keep it, and what it does, what it really does for you and what it means to you to have good credit. You know, some employers are actually checking potential hirees' credit now to see if they are responsible human beings. Not that every person that has bad credit is a irresponsible person, because some people have life circumstances that put them in bankruptcy or whatever, and I totally understand that. But, you know, irresponsibility is not excused by banks. And so there is a price to pay. We'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, we're back on this Labor Day. You know, I hope everybody has a great day. You know, it's morning still, and you may have plans, a picnic plans, or, you know, you may be going on a little sightseeing tour, or you might just be sticking around the house and watching TV, maybe getting some yard work done, catching up on stuff that you hadn't been able to get finished, like me and mowing my yard. Yeah, that rain last week, it was like, you know, I could have bailed it almost. But anyway, you've just got to get something done, accomplish something today. But when you're out on the road and you're driving around, and, you know, if you're in the market for a car, fine, go to a car dealership and buy a car, just be careful, but be careful driving. You know, I'm still seeing way too many people. It's just like these laws about not using the cell phone while you're driving down the road. It's just people just ignore that totally. It's, you know, there for a while, police cruisers were riding around, and if they saw you using your cell phone, they'd pull you over. I'm not sure that they're doing that now. But don't use your cell phone while you're driving. You know, if you have a car, that modern car that has Bluetooth, use the hands-free feature. Don't pick it up and look at it. Doggone it. You know, I've seen so many people, bicycle riders, pedestrians, getting run over, people on motorcycles. And typically if I see a car in front of me swaying back and forth in lane, I get up beside them. They're on their phone. You know, just use your head and stay safe. You know, somebody's life may depend on it. You know, you've got your seatbelt on. You're protected with all that metal surrounding you, and you're, you know, reading your latest Facebook post, or, you know, somebody responded to something. How important is that and compared to somebody walking down the street, some kid, you know, somebody on a bicycle, somebody opening their door? You know, you got to, it's your responsibility, and you pay a terrible price if something like that happens. So let's protect each other. Let's be civil to each other, and cut strangers some slack when you get the opportunity to, because it'll come back to you in the long run. Well, that's all for today, My Car Guru. We'll see you tomorrow.